That's a good example. Anybody else have something planned out where you were hoping it would go really good and then something happens and it doesn't? Well, those things are going to happen, and then we're going to have to respond to that. So yeah, maybe it's like you have all this money paid and, you know, for a trip, and then you're on that, and then the other person gets sick. Or you get to the place and the place you're staying is not what it looked like in the pictures, and then you've got to respond. Or, you know, weather comes, and instead of this beautiful week of sunny weather, it's rainy and stormy. You know, just there's always something, right? So relationships are hard. And, you know, we start off in the dating, the honeymoon phase of it with many probably unrealistic dreams and plans. As you look back, think about, you know, the dating phase, the honeymoon phase. Think about where you're at right now, even if you've only been married, you know, 6 months. How many of you have realized, oh, yeah, I weren't quite realistic with everything we maybe thought it was going to be? Anybody? Mm-hmm. It's got to be something in there. So life doesn't always work out the way that we plan. And that's just a fact. Children don't turn out the way that we think they want or should all the time. So we find even in relationships that we have to put a lot of hard work into it. And I don't want to say these things to make it sound like every marriage is terrible. You know, everything's a disaster. It's all a train wreck. That's not what I'm saying. Marriage is very enjoyable. It's very good. But the truth is, there's no marriage that's the Disney movie marriage, where you're just happily ever after. Oh, no problems. That's how it ends. Every day is happily ever after. That just doesn't exist. So every marriage has to face the struggle of things that happen when dreams don't materialize, when there's hard work required. Like, you're going to have to face that. So let's think through, even for a little bit, of some of the expectations that people bring to marriages. So I've got five laid out for you here, and then I'd like to hear from you, you know, in terms of other ones, because I don't pretend like these are the only five. But these are some of the common expectations that people bring to marriage. I thought marriage would make me happy. So this is a very easy one for people who aren't married yet. You know, just depending on where you're at, to think that, to turn marriage into a personal idol, believing that this perfect spouse is the answer to life's unhappiness and all of those things. But that expectation is going to put an incredible amount of pressure on the other person. As you've been learning in this class, no spouse is perfect. No person can be your single source of happiness. Only Jesus is the one who's able to fulfill and satisfy us, right? And putting that on anybody else is just simply not going to work. A second struggle, or second maybe expectation that people would bring to marriage would be, I thought my spouse would meet all my needs. Maybe not. I mean, we're probably more nuanced than that, right? We probably wouldn't say, well, not, yeah, I know not every single one of them, but they'll meet most of them. There may be a couple little ones that they don't, but the rest, oh, of course they're going to do that. Now, we're going to talk through needs today, what we mean by that. So I think this is going to be helpful for you. But before we do that, just know that Jesus and Him alone, He's the only one who truly supplies what we need. No person can do that. I mean, we're always going to disappoint each other. We're always going to fall short in some way. If we're looking to anyone or anything else to try and fulfill those, it's going to inevitably end up in disappointment to some degree or another. And I think that's a, kind of a good gauge on how things are going. You know, if we're feeling disappointed, if it just seems like it's like, oh, they failed me again and again, it could be a good indication that we're trying to put the focus in the wrong place. A third common expectation that people bring into marriage would be this one: but I thought he or she would change after we got married. Let's talk about that for a minute. How many of you went into marriage already kind of realizing, you know, there's maybe just a little bit of tweaking that my spouse to be will need to do, but I'm pretty confident that give me enough time and everything else that they'll get there. Any of you? I mean, did any of you go into marriage and you know that there's something that they're doing that's very already annoying to you? already kind of grinding on you, and you're thinking, oh, that doesn't matter. I'll be happy with that. It'll all be fine. I don't know if I quite believe that, right? I mean, I think there's something deep down inside of us that thinks that we're going to do something about that. So marrying somebody with the expectation that they'll be a different person after marriage, it's actually unreasonable and unfair. Marriage is not some kind of magical change agent that transforms a person. You know, and it's one thing that we probably hear a lot. You probably heard it a lot. Well, they're not the same person that they were now before I married them. They're different. And that's often used as a complaint, right? They're just very different. They're not the same person that I married. Well, yeah. And you're surprised by that? Because guess what? You're not either. So why are we so surprised when they're not, but we don't mind it that we're not, right? So they're going to be different because we do change. Fourth, I thought if I found the right one, marriage would be easy. Any of you maybe have this idea in mind or know of people who thought this in mind? It's not going to be hard, even as you've kind of come into marriage. It won't be too bad. Like, yeah, I know it's gonna take a lot of work, but it won't be too bad because I've got the right one. Yeah? Yeah. So we find that good marriage takes effort. It takes real work to understand your spouse, to honor them, to love them. And so the spouse is passionate about a strong marriage, thinks about his or her spouse often, and constantly invests in that relationship. The fifth one. Now, again, we wouldn't say it like this, but it's something that we probably think to some degree. I thought good marriages never struggle. You know, if we have a real good marriage, like it shouldn't have any struggles. And then people run into struggles and they're like, oh, I just don't know what to do with that. Like it's not supposed to happen. So we've been talking here in this class about the fact that we live in a Genesis 3 world. Our relationships are impacted by sin. We're sinners. They're sinners. It's a relationship, a union of two sinners. So we're going to expect it not to always go well, right? For things to be challenging. So just because you have a struggle in your marriage doesn't mean that it's a bad marriage. Doesn't mean that, you know, you have to throw it all out the window. Doesn't mean all of those things, right? That's part of a good strong marriage, is that there's going to be struggles in it, but it's what you do with it and where you go with it that really characterize it. So I'd love to hear from you. Any thoughts on any of these five, or what would be maybe some, as you're thinking, some other common expectations that people bring into marriage?
Dating, it feels like your person you're dating always puts you as their top priority. And I mean, I don't know if they really do, but it feels that way. Mm-hmm. And then once you're married, then there's lots of other things that vie for top priority.
Mm-hmm. That's a good one, too. Yeah, that's true, too. Yeah, that's good. Mm-hmm. Yeah, very true.
That's not how my mom did it, or that's not how my dad did it.
Oh, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I remember the first time that Kelly made a pie, she's not here, so I don't know. She came in with this aluminum foil, and there was a crust, you know, in it. And I said, "What's that?" And she said, "It's a pie crust." And I said, "No, it's not." And she said, "Yeah, it is. It's a pie crust." And I said, "That's not how my mom would always make them." Because my mom would take the flour and roll the whole thing and do the whole thing. I didn't even know you could buy like a pie crust already made. And so, oh, like, whoa, okay. But yeah, it did it. You know, she laughed about it because, I mean, it was just kind of funny that I didn't even know that was a pie crust, like that was even a thing. So, What else? Yeah, what are some other expectations, you know, that people bring to marriages? Or even any on this list that you've learned from, seen play out? Alan, I'm sure you've got one or two.
Yeah, there's whole bunches, but one of the things is you always think your spouse is going to change what you want. Also, the way you handle money or other things, you know, and you don't realize that they came from a different background. Mm-hmm. You know, let's put it this way. You worked for everything you did in your family, and your wife comes in and her father was John Beresford Tipton, which was an old name from a guy that used to give away $1 million. Okay, so he had all the money in the world. And she thought she could just write a check for anything. But there wasn't any money in there to write it. But, you know, it makes a big difference where you're coming from,
mm-hmm.
what you're... aspect, what you suspect is going to happen in your marriage.
Mm-hmm.
And I've heard of a story about a gal that was like that, and she just, you know, spent lots of money,
mm-hmm.
a lot more than they had. And then they were in real trouble. She didn't realize that you really have to have money in that bank before you write that check.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, so all kinds of expectations about time and, I don't know, the way you do things. And, you know, all of it. You probably look at every single category and find that you come in there. Denny?
In premarital counseling, we always ask couples to write down goals. And those become expectations. And
mm-hmm.
sometimes they work out, sometimes they don't.
Yeah.
You know, it's things change.
Mm-hmm.
I think of the woman one you see a lot for us is that our husband should understand how we feel or know how we feel or already have put himself in my shoes. And
mm-hmm.
I'm sure men can do that too, but just then you have that breakdown in communication that can lead to a lot of problems because of an expectation you have that was unrealistic,
mm-hmm.
not fair, because that was before not fair.
Mm-hmm. That's good. Yeah.
Maybe on the flip side of that for the men, it's like, yeah, I know how my wife is going to feel. I want to know how she feels.
Mm-hmm.
I know I had a lot of expectations that I didn't even know that I had
mm-hmm.
until they were unmet.
Mm.
And that would cause a lot of friction too.
Mm-hmm.
I've watched enough Hallmark movies. I don't know.
I know one that we had to work through was birthdays. And, you know, my family, when you do a birthday, it's like, okay, you get your cake and your singing and your presents and we move on, right? We, you know, you're good to go after that. You know, Kelly's family is very different. It was the day, maybe even the week, but anyways. So a lot different expectation, you know, when you're kind of coming in there thinking, okay, we'll have a little party and give some presents and do this and, you know, not thinking about, oh, so you're expecting me to like plan out the whole day here. Like that's a little bit different. So again, just lots of things like that. So what do we do then as we realize that marriage isn't the Disney adventure? So we want to talk through just some keys to trying to respond well in a way that brings us closer to Jesus and closer to each other. So let's maybe first begin with discussing unmet expectations. Maybe even an example of that. How would you define an expectation? We'll try to give a definition and then some examples of that maybe that you haven't mentioned yet. Alan?
Okay. I have a son who was born on the 24th of December. And it was like he really expected that to be his birthday, which we worked really hard to do that. That was his birthday. There was no giving of gifts on the 24th that night, not even till midnight, you know. You didn't get anything. He got it for his birthday. But 90%, I would say, 80 to 90% of his gifts that came from relatives even were wrapped in Christmas paper.
Oh.
And he started always figuring out that it seemed like his birthday and Christmas seemed to amount to the same amount of money that was spent for everybody else's Christmas. And he told me that later on. And that was not true from us, but that mm-hmm. was true from others.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, that'd be a yeah. That's a good example of that that expectation. Mm-hmm. Yeah. As you just even talk about that, your own expectations, maybe like what are just some of your basic expectations from a marriage relationship that you have?
Spouse will be there for you.
Okay, so yeah, spouse is who's there. What else?
You don't have a black marker, do you?
I do. We'll try that one.
Because that red's real hard to reach back here.
We'll use the black one. What else? What other expectations do you just have, you know, when... You know, we're not talking anything crazy necessarily, unless they are, but like even just for your relationship, what are some examples of those?
Talking about things.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah, keep them coming.
Spending time together.
Okay.
You verbally in public and in private
settings. Okay. Yeah.
Treat each other with respect.
Okay.
Affection, tenderness.
Okay, same team, yeah. That's good. Mm-hmm.
This isn't necessarily one of those, but what I find interesting is what's the expectation within each of those?
Mm-hmm.
That's yeah. What we probably miss is
mm-hmm.
we agree with all those,
but mm-hmm.
what does it mean within them?
Yeah. Yeah, that's a good point too. Exactly. Yeah, which is a you know another common struggle. So glad you brought that up. But yeah, each and every one of those, you could have differences on, you know, what each person thinks of when they you know think of even those categories. So it doesn't even you know it's not even enough to get these down. Then you got to think about what that means for each person. Yeah. Well, there's a lot we could probably go through, and I'm sure you'll see some more today here. But as we think about responding biblically, so an expectation would be this thing we have in our mind, you know, this desire that we have in our mind of something that's going to happen or how we're going to be treated or how things are going to go. I mean, we're not trying to get all complicated here, but that's the essential, you know, the essence of just an expectation right there. And then to have that unmet would be it's not happening. So talking about things, you know, the unmet expectation for one person, that might be, hey, we're talking about things every day. for another, for the other spouse, that could be, we're talking about things once a week. And so unmet expectation for the one was, well, we're not doing that every day, so this is not happening. Whereas the other spouse is thinking, I don't know what you're talking about. We still talk about it once a week. You know, you're saying they're not met, but we're doing that, right? So you can see how all of those things begin to factor in. So we're going to have expectations of the other that aren't met. And so how do we respond to that is what we're trying to work through here. So I'm giving you a few principles here. So principle number one, acknowledging a heart of sin. So acknowledge, what I mean by that is acknowledging that our hearts are not picture perfect. There's a component of them that is flawed, that is dirty, that needs still God's redemption in that. I don't necessarily, like, I have Jeremiah 17:9 here. That's a passage that's true for the unbeliever. The heart is deceitful above all things and desperately sick. Who can understand it? It's not as true for the believer because the believer has a renewed heart. So there's still a component of indwelling sin. There's still a component of their heart that does need to be renewed. But the bigger picture of a believer is they have a new heart. So I don't think that Jeremiah 17:9 applies directly to a believer in the sense that it does to an unbeliever. But still, there's truth in it, that there's aspects of our heart that are still in need of God's grace. So none of us are coming to the table with 100% pure motives, pure desires. They're always seeking to go off track in some way, shape, or form. So if we come and even begin thinking about that, so I have an expectation that we're going to be, you know, talking about things every day. When this is not happening, I could accuse my spouse of not meeting my expectations. But maybe before I do that, I should stop and consider my own heart in this and realize, oh, it is tainted with sin. It does go off track. There's an element here that is going to need renewing before I proceed further. How do you, I'd love to hear from you, but even as you think about this, so there's an expectation, okay, we're just throwing it out there. You can pick any from the list or add another one, and you're not seeing it happen right now. Again, it's imaginary, just think of something. Help me understand some of your initial responses, and then what have you learned in terms of even thinking through your own responses and growing and changing in those? Does that question make sense? So I'd like to hear from you. What have you learned as over the time you've been married about your own initial responses to not having an expectation met? And then how have you grown in those in correcting the wrong responses? Alan?
I can't remember whether it was Jerry Smalley or who was that was speaking one time, and it was listening to him, and said, you know, there's this thing, and everybody has this, and you say, okay, we spend time talking about things together, you know, about what we're going to do, you know, and they said, usually the men think that they spent time talking when it's 5 minutes or less, and the women think they haven't spent enough time when it's 30 minutes or more. Mm-hmm. They would like more talking about it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if that's true about everybody, but it is true about some things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Good. How about anyone else here? What have you learned about your own initial responses? And then what have you learned in terms of helping to correct, change, adjust even your own initial responses?
I think sometimes it can be like small unmet expectations, and they're not even conscious, like, oh, this was on the list of things I wanted to come home to, or this was on the list of things I wanted to get done this weekend, but it's just very small things. And on the one hand, my reaction initially can be disproportionately angry or disappointed or just selfish. And on the other hand, it's like it's so small, and I know that, so it just can stack up over time to where it becomes, then this has happened for both of us, where it's like Josie said, it can be an expectation you didn't realize you had, but I think we've started to work through, once that comes up, to communicate early that, hey, is this a fair expectation, and we're certainly not perfect at it, but one of the faults has been letting it fester over the period of weeks or months or even years, and then it's like the other one's just totally blindsided, where it's like, I didn't know you wanted me to do that. Sure, I'll do that, or maybe I'll, you know, then you can actually talk through it, but trying not to let it pile up and go to sleep on it.
Good. Denny, did you and Carolyn, did you ever realize, like, somewhere along the line, like, you have some different expectations, and then how'd you maybe kind of grow in that?
I'll give you two different things. One of them, we were talking about cooking earlier, and Carolyn's mom is a great cook. She'll tell you this story herself, so I'm okay doing it.
It's being recorded.
Remember the first time she cooked a beef roast at home? I said to her, you know, the reason your mom's beef roast tastes so well, she seasons it. And we resolved that some years later when I became the cook. The other thing is on time together. It's different couples are different. Some couples do everything together. Just the way our lives and ministries and things have come together, we did things separately. And we enjoyed time together, but we've come to realize we don't have to be together all the time. Mm-hmm. And we have freedom in our marriage. If there's something that I like to do, she supports me in what I like to do. And I do the same for her.
Yeah, good. Good.
I know, sorry.
That's okay.
No,
yeah.
I know for me, when I think about our marriage and more general expectations, is I got angry when my expectations weren't met. Mm-hmm. And I didn't treat her well. Mm-hmm. And how I've grown over the years, and really over the last couple of years, is realizing I just need to serve God, which means serving her and not serving myself.
Good. Yeah.
And so.
Yep, that's good. So, yeah, I'm sure what you recognize is that initially you can have a lot of those sinful responses, whether that's anger, despair, you know, many things right there. And then part of our Christian life is understanding those things and recognizing them quicker rather than later, so that it doesn't turn into, it doesn't get to the point of now we're taking that out on the other person. You know, so where initially you would have been angry with them, maybe giving them the silent treatment, you know, so on and so forth. You now quickly recognize that, this expectation wasn't met, but the way I'm wanting to respond in this situation, that wouldn't be God honoring to do that. So I'm gonna choose a different response in that. That's hopefully part of our Christian growth there. So acknowledging that we do have a heart that's in need of redemption, and it is got some things in it, as you've been hearing throughout this class. So I'd like to, before we go any further, one of the key factors is this category of needs. And specifically today, I want to talk through biblical needs. Because this category of needs is everywhere you go. I mean, you can't go anywhere without somebody using that language. You can hardly read anything without people using that, talking about that. So you're getting bombarded by this all the time. You need this, you need this, you need this. And so if we as Christians don't have a good biblical understanding of what need is, I'm going to argue that you're going to end up in a bad place, and it's going to make this whole topic a whole lot more difficult. So before we talk through that biblically, I would like to have you fill this out right now. So I'm going to give, let's give you like 5-6 minutes for you to think through this. So what you do here, it says personal or relational problems often arise when we think or feel that our personal needs are unmet or our personal rights are denied. By examining these thoughts and feelings, we can gain insight into our problems. So part one, what are your felt rights or needs? So just put a check mark by any one of those items that you think is your personal right, a personal need that you have, or even a very strong desire. You can put a clarifying comment after that if you want. That's fine. Then the second thing you're going to do is you're going to circle the ones that are currently being unmet or denied, especially if they're producing anger, resentment, fear, worry, and any other problematic thoughts or feelings. Now, just so you know, I'm not asking you to share this with the group, okay? So you can keep this quiet. You don't have to share. If you want to share some of it, that's fine, but I'm not going to make anybody here. So, you know, don't worry that other people are spying on you and it's like, all right, Alan, bring yours up. Let's show the class what you circled here. And we're not doing that, okay? So then on the next page, the second page, again, there's a few more to check or to circle. Then part two is describe the three most pressing ones. So of all the ones you checked or all the ones you circled, which three would be the ones that you feel like are the most pressing, the most important? What is it? Who is it being unmet or denied by? In what way? How do you tend to respond or to treat this person? Okay, so let's, we'll give at least a quarter after or 10:15 here. Give you a little time to do that.
Can I ask, are these supposed to be desires that, or needs that, like if we really are putting pen to paper, like, okay, I understand this isn't a need, but practically I do desire this very strongly, even if it's wrong, or should it be, I think like this is a justifiable thing to check, yeah, I need this.
We're taking out the Sunday school answer, and we're saying where they're like real living, like where you're really at. Mm-hmm. Does anybody need a pen? Try to get a few more pens here.
They got a box of them right there.
Oh, okay. There we go.
You just didn't get past.
Thank you. Okay, well, I'm going to let you take this home, and I would encourage you to keep thinking about it and working through it. It'll be really helpful for you to put some thought into it and identify those things. But as you're doing that, was there anybody here who had nothing circled? Okay, that's all I needed to know. So let's think through then a biblical perspective on this category we call needs. So I've got a few places in Scripture here that I'd like to read from. Can someone read to us from Luke 10, verses 41 to 42? Can I get somebody to do that? Just raise your hand because I got a few to assign here. Okay, Josie. Then 2 Peter 1, verses 3 and 4. No. Gwen, okay. Psalm 27, 4. You want to do Psalm 27, 4? Tom? Psalm 73, 23 to 26. AJ? Yep. And then what? Last one, Matthew 4, 4. Kevin, thank you. Okay. So, yeah, maybe we'll just start from the back and work our way to the front. Make it a little easier.
Did you say
2
Peter 1?
Yeah. 4? Yep, that's right. 2 Peter 1, 3 to 4. Yep. Okay. Kevin?
Matthew 4, 4. But he answered, it is written, man shall not live by bread alone, but by every word that comes from the mouth of God.
Okay. So as you're listening to this, just hear the verse and think through what's being said in there. Okay. I think that's, yeah.
Luke 10, 41 and 42. But the Lord answered her, Martha, Martha, anxious and troubled about many things, but one thing is necessary. Mary has chosen the good portion, which will not be taken away from her.
Psalm 73, 23 through 26. Nevertheless, I am continually with you. You have taken hold of my right hand. With your counsel, you will lead me, and afterward take me in glory. Whom have I in heaven but you? And besides you, I desire nothing on earth. My flesh and my heart fail, but God is the rock of my heart and my portion forever.
Okay. Then Gwen.
His divine power has given us everything we need for life and godliness through our knowledge of him who called us by his own glory and goodness. Through these, he has given us his very great and precious promises, so that through them you may participate in the divine nature and escape the corruption of the world caused by evil desires.
Okay, thank you. So as you heard those passages, what stuck out to you? So again, we're on the topic of needs. What stuck out to you from those passages?
The Lord is our
needs meter. There we go. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Good. Anything else?
None of the needs on our paper were included in those papers.
Okay. And that is really important, isn't it? So that is going to run very contrary to, again, much of what you've heard, much of what you maybe even thought through or what others would tell you, is that as we think about biblically, it puts a different perspective on what we call needs. And so one thing that we saw, I think, or one thing that you hopefully heard from these passages was that our one true need is for the Lord and his grace. His redemption. That's a true need. I mean, we're doomed apart from that. So that's our ultimate need right there for Jesus and his redemption. But those other things are not needs in the sense that if you don't get those, you can't please the Lord. Right? So just think through all these things on this list. If you're not respected by your spouse, does that stop you from pleasing the Lord? No. If you're not being treated with affection or tenderness, does that stop you from pleasing the Lord? No. We go through each and every one of these. right? So a lot of times this language of need is not that helpful, because it makes it sound like if I, because once you put something in the category of need, if I don't get this, then I can't go forward. I can't operate, right? And that's problematic. So it's more accurate to say all of the things on this list are desires. Wants, desires. That's an appropriate category to put them in. But if you make the shift and you put them in the category of need, you've put yourself in a very dangerous spot. Okay? Because you better get that, or otherwise you're not going to be able to please the Lord in that. So here's a few questions for you. So even as you think through these, are these something you need to get, or do you actually need to give them? In other words, is it more important to be getting these things, or is it more important to be giving these things? That can help you think. That'll help you, you know, change your perspective even. When you're angry, depressed, anxious, in conflict, it's great to ask yourself those questions of, what am I wanting so badly that I'm not getting? You know, what I think I need or desperately want is fill in the blank. You must give me fill in the blank, or I'll be angry or cold toward you. If only fill in the blank would change, then I'll be satisfied or content or joyful. So, like I said, I think it's fine to put these in the categories of desires, even very strong desires, but I just urge you not to put these in the category of needs. So as you go back, we do want to be honest, right? And so part of the change is recognizing, wow, I've been putting this thing in the category of a need, and it's really not. It's a strong desire that I have, but I don't have to have that to glorify God. I don't have to be free of intense problems and pressures in my relationship to please the Lord. It's not wrong to want that, but even if I don't get that, it's not going to stop me from pursuing Him. So as you go back here then, I would say then that the three you put there and filled in, I would say press into those, because most likely they reveal a lot about your heart and what you're really wanting. And they can give you a good clue into the way you operate. Is you're probably, you are probably tending to operate in a way that tries to go for these things. So that can clue you in as to what's going on. So it's safe to say that every relationship struggles from these unmet expectations. And even if you knew what all the expectations were, your spouse still couldn't meet them all. The best husband can't, the best wife can't. And so what are we going to do then when they're not met? Are we going to let anger, frustration, irritation, disappointment get the best of us? Or will we go to the Lord for His help? So our focus here isn't on the other person. You can't change them. They're not in your control. The Lord doesn't put you as the one who has the power to change them. So let go of that. Just focus on yourself. You can change the way that you think. The way in which you respond to dreams and expectations that fail. So let's end here for today. The benefit of having 2 weeks in a row like this is I can pick up on whatever we didn't get to this time. So we'll finish the rest of this next time and then dive into the next topic on our agenda. So I'll dismiss you all, and thanks again for being a part of this today.
Thank you, Josh.